John just said to count us in, so this is going to take a while. One, two, three, four.
I had to be going in the wrong direction, I think.
Is this a new thing? Oh. Did I miss something in five podcasts?
Oh, 405. This is the Punk News Podcast.
Yeehaw.
Whoosh.
Rolling, 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 though the streams are swollen, keep them doggies rolling, roll. Through rain and wind and weather, hell bent for leather, wishing my girl was by my side. All the things I'm missing, good fiddles, love and kissing, are waiting at the end of my ride. Move 'em on, hit 'em up, move 'em on, hit 'em up, raw high. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, let 'em out, cut 'em out, ride 'em in, raw.
Hi, welcome to the Punkins Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of parts unknown, Michigan, Mr. Tom Trauma.
What's up, guys? Back with my new silent but deadly computer.
Yeah, this is a big deal for the podcast. So one of the frequent survey what's it called, comments that we got was, someone buy Tom a fucking new computer. And while none of us bought Tom a new computer, Tom has a new computer. So which means
the beauty of it is my 17-year-old daughter, who likes to run into things with her car, she was watching Netflix on the computer and she had it precariously perched and it fell off and smashed. So that's why I have a new computer.
That's the best way to do it.
You know what they say, Tom?
I guess. I hope she doesn't do this to her car. Just smash it until I buy her a new one.
You know what they say, Tom? There's no such thing as an accident.
I guess. So you're saying, like, destiny is smiling on me.
Oh, no. I'm saying that we are going to
and
cut
I'm out
a check.
I'm out $600.
We're going to cut an official Punk News check and send it to your daughter for wrecking your computer.
Good. She can pay it back to me for my computer.
So, anyway, so while that is happening, we're also not recording your separate audio track tonight. So we're almost there. We're almost at perfect audio file quality, but we can't quite get there.
Well, like, I had my old computer figured out. Like, this new one, I'm trying to figure things out, and I remembered that I suck at computers. So, I'll figure it out.
Also,
or make someone else figure it out for me.
Yeah, nerds, right? Okay, also joining me on the show, Mr. John Gentile out of, I'm going to say Philadelphia. It's pretty clear that you're coming to us out of Philadelphia.
John Gentile from Philly. Hello, Punk News. I was on the radio on Tuesday, so you could just call me Mr. Golden Voice.
Did you hit your post, John? Did you hit your post?
What's Casey Kasem say? And now, here's a dedication.
Try to hit your post? You know what that means? Like, where you hit, like, you speak your part while the song's going, but then you stop just before the singing starts?
Oh, see, I actually hate when they do that. Honestly,
did you do that? That's too advanced. It's, like, considered, like, the top DJ skill.
I just yelled about shit and then played rare songs.
There you go. It works. It's the same thing you do on this.
True.
I think that, like, start talking while the song is going is kind of cool. I actually kind of like that. I don't hear it too much anymore. I feel like when I was a kid, there was a lot more shows where you would listen to, like, where like there would actually be like, well, this is probably back in the era when DJs actually picked the songs that they're playing at least a little more. And you'd get a little bit more of that happening, and you would get more of, you know, crossfading between things and just like people doing cool stuff. And now it's just like a fucking robot. Just,
you know, as someone who is 10 years older than you, I got to say, I hated it back when I was a kid because you were always waiting for your favorite song to come on so you could tape it on your boombox, like tape a clean copy of it off radio. And the stupid DJ would shut up, and then you'd have the stupid DJ talking on your sweet cassette copy on your boombox. So
you know what?
Sure, but then
everyone like 40 and above knows what I'm talking about,
right? But if you were to go back to that now, that would sound so cool that we would have this like weird like vintage radio, you know, static in between in between your songs. Like that, nowadays, that would be like a really hip.
Oh yeah, dude, those tapes are awesome, dude. It's like you're listening to www, and here you have Rat with Round and Round. No, it would suck.
There's
I don't think I ever recorded a good song. You know, I might have got like, should I stay or should I go, or you know, like Rock the Casbah or something. But it was mostly, you know, hair metal.
There is a new record that is out from Ben Cook from Fucked Up under his Young Gov persona called Too Sad to Funk, and it's him doing more like weird pop music, but he has a bunch of like little skits in between the songs on it that are, I mean, they may be ones that he just made up himself and they're not actually like from some vintage era recording, but they very well could be. And like, there's a few about like strip clubs or things like that, and like towns out surrounded Toronto. And there's one with this really gruff voice guy yelling like, "Toronto, let's get naked," in between some of the songs. And I love it. It's so cool. I want to hear your fucked up failed tape recordings though. That'd be nice.
What's interesting, on some old promo records, they actually list what the counting is in the record. Also like intro 7 seconds, intro 15 seconds. So the DJ knows exactly how to hit the post, as it were.
Well, see, the DJ actually had to do something then and not just, you know, fuck around on Facebook in between.
Most DJs now are computers.
That's true.
They don't really have that expense hardly. I mean, you have your morning guys, but yeah, it's just...
Man, morning guys are obnoxious. I can't stand morning zoo radio DJs. They really are just... Oh. There's a guy in Philadelphia called John DiBella. Dude just makes my skin crawl. Like, he's always insulting people and it's like obnoxious.
Howard or nothing, man. Howard or nothing.
There were definitely radio shows that I listened to as a kid that I feel that I'm going to say underappreciated, but I don't really know how I could have underappreciated them, and that like I couldn't take them with me to the future or anything. But I remember just so fondly, and it was just like there was a lot of like DJ stuff like that happening, like talking into songs and things like that. There's something that used to run on 102.1 The Edge out of Toronto on like Saturday nights that I think they were broadcasting music from like some club that they would DJ every Saturday night. But
oh yeah, yeah, I remember that, the live, but, yeah, the live DJing sets, like,
but from a club.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and they got away from
not
doing
from that station, but.
Yeah, but what they were doing is that, like, if you were going to play club music, you couldn't play, like, quite the normal, like, alternative rock. Like, this would have been, like, it's like 97, 98. Like, you couldn't play, like, normal alternative rock that you would have been playing during the day. You had to play stuff that was a little bit more dancey, which means that they ended up playing a lot of, it was a lot of new wave and a lot of goth and just, like, a lot of this, like, cool 80s stuff that... Like, in retrospect, was just, like, really fun music, especially when they were trying to, I don't know what the actual DJ term is for this, but, like, when you're playing one song and then you start the other song so that the beats between the two of them match up so that you can kind of, like, do kind of fun little fades in between, like, the outro of the one and the intro of the next. Like, I'm never sure how much that stuff was just pre-programmed and how much there was someone with a couple turntables doing it, but it always just sounded really fucking cool to my, like... you know, 16-year-old ears. And I miss that. Like, I can't get that anywhere right now. It doesn't happen.
Dude, talking about 12-inch singles, like, Adam White, it's so awesome. Like, I've never actually experienced this live, but I've heard on the radio a couple times. Like, they're playing 12-inch 80 singles, so the versions are a little different. You know, they're longer, they got something else in them. And then they transition right into another track, and you're like, holy crap. It's like, it really is awesome. We should start, like, a 80s 12-inch single night somewhere. That's what we should do. We should all go.
There are certain things that are like just drilled into my head from that era, and like, and the one that I always remembered was that, like, whenever the DJ and his name escapes me, but whenever the DJ would play a Beastie Boys song in this mix, he would always, without fail, refer to them as the Beastie Brothers. And he was just like in his cool radio voice, like he'd come back in. He's like, "That was the Beastie Brothers." And we go into the next thing, and just, oh man, I wish I'd go back and listen to dumb radio from my youth and really appreciate what was going on.
You know who else called the Beastie Boys the Beastie Brothers?
Who's that?
Lee Scratch Perry. And he calls them that on Hello Nasty. And he calls them that again on Dr. Lee PhD remix version on the single version, the CD single version of Intergalactic.
Oh, John, you know so much about this stuff. What's in the mailbag, John?
Okay, you can always use it at podcast@punknews.org. That's podcast@punknews.org. And we have two letters today. And here's the first one. Dear Punk News, where are the episodes? Unsigned.
So I don't know when this was when these things are written, because that's an evergreen letter, right? Like, people could send that whenever. So this is episode 405. As of us recording this right now, episode 401 is the last one that we've actually released into the world. So the current logjam on this is Mr. Gregory, but Greg's been working hard in a whole bunch of little projects. So we'll get through. We keep throwing shit on his pile without any particular attention paid to what he has to do and what his time frame is. But
this is from Al DeWitches. I think Al DeWitches. This is to all of you, but especially those of you who talk about record collecting. That's my favorite segment.
What?
That's what Al DeWitches says. He says
no.
What do you mean?
That's the worst thing that we do.
Oh,
but continue.
I like talking about record. Anyway, here's what he says. You've said that you don't like bootlegs, but I like them. What's the point of paying £60 for a used Clash record when I can get a new bootleg on colored vinyl for £12 to £15? I mean, you couldn't pay a scalper money. Oh, you wouldn't pay a scalper money. So why pay the person hoarding used records like you would pay a scalper? It's not like Joe Strummer gets any of that money anyways. Love the podcast from Al DeWitches.
Now, he seems to be implying that the bootleg here is like a copy of an existing record that is readily available.
Yeah,
is that how I read that?
That's how I read that, yeah.
I mean, like, I'm all for bootleg if it's something weird, if it's something that, like, would not otherwise exist in the world, then I'm far more, I'll look the other way on the legality or the efficacy of the bootleg. But if it's like just like a fucking copy of like Give Him Enough Rope and you just don't want to go pay for it in the store, I don't know about that one.
Thomas?
Yeah, I don't like bootlegs in general. I see where the guy's coming from, and I suppose under the right circumstance, I would probably buy one. But yeah, I would probably just buy the easily available in print version if possible.
I've got a lot of bootlegs of unreleased stuff. I'm of two stances regarding unreleased bootlegs. On one stance, it's like it is extremely rude and you could say even unethical to release art that an artist did not want to release, you know. But on the other hand, artists aren't always the best judges of their own work, and sometimes the best stuff isn't released just because the artist doesn't realize it, or because it's out of the artist's control and it's under record in a record label's control. The best example: Tom Trauma, 12 Hits from Hell.
I would say another one. The one that always bothers me is this band from Miami, Ohio. By way, you know, they were kind of known as a Detroit band. This great band, Necros. They actually toured with the Misfits in the 80s. But one of the members won't let the stuff get released. So these amazing, amazing kind of somewhere between punk and hardcore records are all unavailable.
You know, it's funny, sometimes the bootlegs...
Huge money.
There's a bunch of Russian bootlegs of some Rolling Stones albums. It's the mono mix, and the bootleg versions are actually more curated than the official version. And you see that, like, sometimes, like, a record label will just bust out reissues just because they want to get a quick... they want quick cash. And honestly, like, spending extra time remastering or getting bonus tracks isn't going to make them sell anymore, so you might as well just spit them out. Sometimes the bootleg is better than... Like, another great example... Freddie Mercury's first solo album. The Russian bootleg version is way better than the official version because it's got like 8 extra remixes and B-sides on it that the CD version doesn't have, just because who's really going to buy, you know, a remastered version of the first Freddie Mercury album except for like me? You know what I mean? So kudos to the Russians on that.
Well, the Necros I was just talking about, their second guitar player, like, compiled... He made a bootleg. He didn't have rights to any of the songs, but there was a pretty prominent, it was CD, a bootleg CD of Necro stuff. It's got all their stuff on it. I was able to get a copy. So that was sort of like band authorized because it's all tied up in label and band member disputes, you know?
Plus they had that really cool stand up coffin bass.
you're thinking like the Necromantics or something.
No, I know. Sorry. That's a stupid joke.
We're gonna say is that, but however,
check them out. There's stuff out there. It's actually on Bandcamp now, so you can actually get digital versions of it. It's pretty cool.
I'm not a fan of bootleg versions of officially released stuff, even when it's like expensive and like I don't see someone that has a $50 record that's selling for $50 as a scalper. I mean, that's the same as an investment, isn't it? Like, if you want to say that guy shouldn't get $50, or if you want to say that guy's immoral for selling a $50 record for $50, then basically you're saying property as a whole is illegal and the concept of property shouldn't exist, which is an argument. It's an argument I don't agree with, but then your issue isn't really with the quote scalping of records. It's with property in of itself. I would say the one exception is when an original is like $400 or $300 and you can't get it, then I think a bootleg is okay, just because people should hear. The point of copyright is so people can hear music and so artists get paid. But if the only thing exists is like a $400 record, then I'll look the other way on a bootleg. But you know, if it's $30 or $40, I'm not a fan of the bootleg. Just spend the money and get the nice real version. Because honestly, bootlegs, even despite what I just said, 97% of the time, bootlegs of official releases are crappy as hell. And I would say 80% of the time, bootlegs of releases that don't actually exist aren't worth the money, but you always get suckered. But that 20% of the time, the 10% of the time when it's a bootleg of something that doesn't exist, it's like gold. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I have a really weird caveat that I want to add into all this.
Let's hear it.
I'm perfectly okay with the bootleg if the goal, or if the effect of the bootleg existing is that you get to hear something unusual that you wouldn't have heard otherwise. I don't care about the bootleg as a money-making vehicle for the person that is bootlegging it. So I am perfectly okay with stealing the bootleg. Like, that to me is like the height of efficacy. So bootleg can exist, but also you can steal it.
Are you okay with stealing it from the shop?
That's maybe more of a gray area, but you could definitely steal it online. But you know, if it's a shop that is selling it, they should be selling it for very little to no money.
The worst thing is when they price a bootleg between actual price and like bootleg price, so you're not sure. I got burned by Milk Crate Records in Philadelphia once on a Melvin's record. You pricks. I saw a Melvin's record for $45. Adam. Wow, $45. That's a $90 record. Wow. I bought it. I ran home. I inspected it. Suckered those jackasses.
Because like the bootleg guy has no right to that music, so I'm okay with them not profiting off of it. But if they're just going to put it into the world as sort of like as something that in and of itself is of service to art, then I'm okay with that. So let's say the world's greatest missing artistic artifact, which is the record that Green Day recorded between Warning and American Idiot.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, they lost it, or it was the tapes were stolen, or I don't know, it fell off the bus. I mean, something happened to it, right? They recorded a record and it did not come to light for some shady reason. If you were to have acquired those master tapes because they were in your basement in Niagara Falls and you didn't tell anyone, right? If you were to acquire those and then you were just to like release them onto the internet in some sort of like, you know, you put on you grabbed your police voice encoder thing and you made a creepy anonymous video on YouTube and you were just like, here are the lost Green Day tapes, and then you released it on
send one Bitcoin to the dark web.
Yeah, right. So if you did something weird with it and then released it to the world, that I'm okay with. If you then were like, you know, here's the lost Green Day tapes, it's $20 a pop, fuckers, right? Okay, that's not yours to make money off of.
What if Green Day says we can those releases because we don't like them, but then you come across them?
I would still release them.
What if I'd be like,
I'd pop it into my car, right? I'd be driving along and be like, man, I am not into this at all, and I'd just toss it right out the window.
In Green Day's case, right, you could argue, and I'm going to argue for this, that Green Day is, for all their stupid faults, is a musical act of relative historic importance, right? They're a band that exists beyond themselves, right? This isn't some indie band that, you know, is struggling to make their name in the world. This is a band that has sold millions of records that have affected millions of people's lives. And the lost recordings of that band, I think, are in the public interest, despite the wishes of the band at that point, right? Like, the band can fully voice that, hey, we hate these songs. And they're within their rights to do that, and that should be part of the conversation about those songs. But if they were to show up, you know, I wouldn't like try to argue that, like, no, we have to wipe these from the earth because Green Day doesn't want anyone to hear them. Like, no, sorry, like, you've created a brand and an entity that exists in an, like, above yourselves. You are something else than just, like, you know, like three doofuses and your music at this point. So I would be okay releasing that. Why I'd be less okay releasing.
So it's okay to steal from somebody as long as Adam decides they have enough money.
Pretty much, right? Okay. I'd feel.
I just want to make sure. So I'll shoot you an email if I'm on the fence about one.
Yeah, please.
Say, Adam, I need you to help me out with this. Is this band rich enough for me to steal from?
What if
let's say it was like Joyce Manor or something, and they had some songs they didn't want released? You know, that's a small, moderately popular band.
Imagine the scenario in which I would come up with a Joyce Manor tape, but who knows?
What if it's an early important first wave West Coast hardcore band that broke up in the 80s, but then got back together in a modified lineup without one of the key members, but the other members are all amazing, and they did an exclusive amazing string of East Coast shows, but the one member that wasn't involved didn't want them to release a live album, so that kind of blocked it, and a editor at a music website mildly contemplated bootlegging the live shows, which were amazing, and then putting them out for posterity's sake. What do you think of that one, Ed?
Well, John, I'm getting several red flags here as to what should be done with this situation. But, yeah. Hey, I was just thinking, you know, you were just – listen, you have a vessel now. You have this label. And I was just like, man, I'm looking at this – like all these – old punk bands that their stuff's out of print and their records go for like $200. I'm like, man, we could buy the really high quality like FLAC files on Bandcamp. We could make masters. We could press vinyl, John. We should do it. Narma Records. I'm ready to invest.
I was in Necro's
bootleg.
I was
because I need those records.
I was considering making records, but Tom, you're looking at like $4,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a big initial investment.
I mean, that's why.
I don't know. Listen, I got bands around here, local bands that are making 200 copies. I don't know how they do it.
They lose money. That's how they do it. But honestly,
everyone I know is just making fucking tapes. No one's making records because it's too expensive.
Well, that's why we don't live in Canada, Adam. We don't want your freaking tapes.
I have written to several cool bands. I'm like, yo, let's do a CD reissue of all your obscure 80s stuff that people will love. They're like, well, we only want to do a record. I'm like, well, I can't. I'm not going to spend $6,000 on you guys. How about a CD?
I swear they still sell. People still sell CDs at shows. I mean, I think they sell well. Yeah. Listen, I'm gonna go if I go to a show and no I'm wearing, you know, like a pair of Dickey shorts or something. Like, I can buy a CD and shove it in my back pocket. If I'm buying a record, I gotta wait till the very end of the show.
I don't think people buy CDs. Anyways, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org.
I do, but I'm old.
Well, I do too, Tom. I agree with you. But honestly, Tom, you and I are in the minority. It's true. The kids want records and cassettes, and I'm going to make cassettes. But
I'm telling you, the kids don't listen to records.
I think you're right.
They just buy them.
You're right. I mean, I think so. I think so.
I'm just happy people are buying stuff from bands. If they're not going to listen to their records, then whatever.
True that.
That's their problem.
33 minutes in, no news so far. Oh, yeah. I'm back, baby. I'm back.
You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. I got a couple of quick things that I want to talk about. First of all, this past week I saw Yellow Man, Adam White, Tom Trauma. Who is Yellow Man?
Some kind of a reggae guy, isn't he?
Yeah, Tom, I mean, a Yellow Man is the legend. He's an albino dancehall guy that had fatal cancer like two or three times, survived all three times.
Ah, very fatal.
I saw, well, fatal to the degree that the doctor said you're going to die in 2 weeks, and Yellow Man said, no, I'm going to go to a different doctor and get half my jaw removed, and he did, and he survived. And
so he got like all the mojo that Bob Marley didn't have with his toe cancer, this guy got.
Well, that's because Bob Marley's death. Uh-oh. Bob Marley, the doctor said, we need to cut off your toe. Bob Marley said no, and then the cancer spread. So, you know.
And Yellow Man's just like cut off whatever.
And honestly, that I am a huge fan of Yellow Man. He did for 2 hours. It was one of the most energetic performances I've ever seen. And you know, some,
what kind of crowd are we talking about size wise, John? A couple hundred?
Yeah, about 150, 200. Not huge, not huge. Yeah. But
where do you play it?
Ardmore, Pennsylvania. So like not a huge market, but you know, all right. In California, he does about 300. Reggae's bigger in California. And I got, you know, I mean, everybody once in a while say, you know, oh, my life's so bad, or oh, you know, I can't believe this happened to me. And I just think about Yellow Man, and I'm not trying to be too, you know, Mr. Positivity, but Yellow Man was born in albino in Jamaica, which is a huge problem. Like in Jamaica in the 80s, like they didn't like albinos. He was abandoned by his mother at 6, not at 1, at 6. You know, he becomes famous, and then all of a sudden he gets fatal cancer. He's like,
so he had time to get attached to her.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like,
is a shitty time to abandon a child. Right? I mean, Adam,
you've had 6-year-olds. You've been tempted.
I'm tempted right now. Mine's only 5, but I'm tempted right now. But just like 6 is like. Like if they abandoned the child immediately, it was like, okay, clearly we were going to abandon this child. 6 is like, well, we tried. This ain't working out. Right. So here's your papers, you know.
So he becomes famous. He becomes Jamaica's most famous dancehall guy, like 82, 83. He gets fatal cancer of the jaw, and the doctor, you're going to be dead in 2 weeks. And he's like, no, I'm not. And he gets half his jaw removed, you know, stays famous a little bit while longer, gets fatal cancer again of the throat, gets that operated on, and, you know, He has lost popularity since the 80s, obviously, but I am so inspired that he's still up there despite all the hurdles he's faced in life, and he's still up there giving 110% and seems truly joyous to be up there. I mean, wow. Talk about an inspiring guy, talking about an amazing musician. Yellow Man is the king, and you should go see him if you get the chance.
That always shines through, man, when somebody really is enjoying performing. But some people you tell they're irritated, and it's just how they make their living. You see a guy that's actually like appreciates the fact that he's still able to do it.
Also, he has Marfan syndrome on top of that. I mean, man. Mm. Anyways, Yellow Man is really the king of the dance hall. I see him every time I can. He's the legend. Actually, I missed him last year because it was the same day Summer Soiree, and I felt so bad. But this year I caught him. Anyways, second thing, Boots Riley, he just put out his film called Sorry to Bother You. This movie is amazing. Like there's so many shitty movies these days. Like, I think of every movie as a Transformer movie, basically. Just like a dumb movie with no plot that I hate. You know, like they all look the same. They all have the same pacing. Sorry to Bother You, which actually, by Boots Riley, I thought it was going to be like an art house film. It's like it's a major film in like over 1,000 theaters throughout the United States. It was the 6th highest grossing film of the week, which sounds low, but the movie above it was like Transylvania 3 or whatever. Like, the top 5 are like mega blockbusters, and then the next one is Sorry to Bother You. And I've never seen a movie like this before. It's unique. It's well told. It's just an amazing film. It's a movie made for John Gentile. If you know what I'm into, you know what the movie's like, and it is truly one of the most clever, interesting, amazing films I've ever seen. And I'm not just saying that. I it's rare that I'm in the theater. I'm like, wow, this really blew my mind. Like, I like Star Wars. I like Marvel. I like those movies. But Sorry to Bother You, I'm like, this is an important piece of art. You have got to go see Sorry to Bother You. So anyways, about when they first announced this, I emailed Boots because I've known him for a while now. And I said, Boots, can we do an interview? He's like, yeah, definitely. Email the PR people for the movie. And, you know, you want to go by the rules when you can. So I email them. And they're like, yeah, we'll let you interview him, but you got to go see the movie first. I'm like, all right. Well, they're like, there's a pre-screener in Manhattan. And nobody gets paid at Punk News, so I'm not going to take a day off from work and drive all the way up to Manhattan to see the movie. You know what I mean? So I'm like, well, I can't do that. Can I interview him anyways? They're like, well, you got to wait till you see it. Then we'll let you interview him. And for like 6 weeks, I was getting so bad, like mad. Like once every 3 days, I'm like, they're blowing me off. They're blowing me off. Those jerks are blowing me off. You know, I interviewed Boots when he wasn't that popular. And luckily, like, I'm not placing the blame on Boots. Like, I'm placing it on his handlers, which you can do to conveniently when you don't want to, like, think less of, like, people, like, you're a fan of, you know? And I'm like, they're blowing me off. Those assholes. I'm like, now that he's big time, they're blowing us off. They're blowing us off. So I go and see it. I'm amazed. I send him an email. I'm like, all right, I saw it, assholes. Let me talk to him. And I'm sure they're going to blow me off. They're like, okay, how about tomorrow at 2:30? I'm like, I'm like, wow. So I interviewed Boots. It went well. The point being is Boots is a guy that walks the way he talks. He had a big article in Rolling Stone, big article in Esquire, big article everywhere, Wall Street Journal, everywhere, and he still had time to speak to Punk News. and I really appreciated that. And want to talk about a guy that walks the way he talks, Boots Riley. I mean, how about that? Like, he could have blown us off, you know, and people that are less famous than him now have totally blown us off, but he was there, guys. He was there when it counted.
Cool.
I have not seen this movie. I've seen the trailer, and it looked really fun.
I do recommend seeing it in the theaters. It's great. It is real great. Last thing, I got a philosophical question for you guys. So I was driving back from Yellow Man, and I was listening to Two Tone Scott, you know, and next to me, there's these four white frat boys in SUVs, and they're blasting trap music. You guys know what trap music is, right?
I don't, John. What is trap music?
Trap music, it's a music that was not necessarily invented, but spearheaded by guys like Gucci Mane. It's basically Southern rap with high production values that is strictly about, like, selling drugs, and, like, you're rich and you sell drugs.
So if I heard it, I would just think it was rap.
Yeah, well, not necessarily. I mean, like it doesn't have the political element of, like, N.W.A. or Public Enemy, it's almost always extremely sexist, like you know. And I'm a huge fan of hip hop. I'm not a fan of trap. So it's very, I'm a gangster. I sell drugs. I kill people. Yeah. I have sex with all these girls. I do all these things to these girls. Bitch, bitch, bitch. You know, that's trap music. And so there's these four white frat boys. Like, you can tell they're pretending they're trap guys while they're driving. And I'm like, those tool bags. You know, those jerkwads. It's like, you know, and I'm almost like, you know, it's almost racist that they're doing that. They're like, oh, they're pretending that they're African American while they're driving around in the suburbs, you know. But if they were actually in like an inner city, like, they probably would not be as, you know,
calling each other the N-word.
Right. And then I look over at myself and I'm like, oh, well, I'm listening to ska. Am I just as bad as them? You know. So two questions: are those guys dicks? Are they being racist? Or is that part of trap music? Are you allowed to pretend you're a drug dealer even if that's not your background at all? And is John a tool bag for driving around listening to 60s black Jamaicans?
John, I wouldn't want anybody in our closed group to see you driving around not listening to something with Danzig singing, personally. But that's just me. I think cultural appropriation or that kind of thing, I think it's kind of overstated, kind of overrated. Listen to whatever the hell you want. But yeah, I think that's the definition of poser, right? Middle class white kids going back to their, you know, parents' house to sleep in their $1,000 bed while they drive around in their car that their parents bought for them, calling each other the N-word and pretending to be something they're not. So that's poor form.
Is it racist? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't, maybe. I'm slow to look into people's hearts or minds or to try to guess what's going on in people's heads, you know? It's not my thing.
Adam White?
I see four affluent white guys having a time with each other, I immediately fall into a high school mindset where I'm like just some awkward nerd kid with my punk rock.
I thought you were going to say you did the same thing, but you were listening to
Lex. Seeing any group, and I say this, I'm saying white guys, but I think that matters for this, and I'm saying this as a white guy. But like seeing any like group of bros doing bro things, I instinctively get my back up, and I'm suddenly in like high school fiefdom, and I'm like, fuck those guys.
That's what I was thinking.
Group, but the thing is, you get a group of four people hanging out together.
I'm not approaching it from a modern argument about like, are these guys being, you know, are they being racially insensitive? Are they appropriating other people's cultures? I just look at it from like I'm in the hallway in high school, and those guys are assholes. So that's.
But if you get four young men together, I don't think it's a white thing necessarily, because you get four young black guys together, they'll act differently than they do if there's one guy. You get four young white guys together, they'll act different than there is if there's only one of them. I think that's just, you know, the more people there are, the lower the collective IQ is. That's just sort of the way it works when you're young.
That's very true, Tom. That's very true. Last question. Am I a tool bag for driving around listening to black Jamaicans from the 60s? You know what I mean?
Short answer? Short answer? Yes.
Fair enough. Well, listen, here's a Jamaican from the 80s. This is Yellow Man and Fathead doing Ribbit Me Hand, and this is some of the greatest music ever, and Yellow Man is one of the greatest.
Fashion. Let me start like kind of modern. Learn.
Ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot, Lord. Ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot. No took me na me eye out and hit me a fellow. You see me na the library, me a fi read a story book. You see me na the kitchen, man a cook me the cook. When me go fishing and me line and me hook, the past thing fi take, you call it took. But when you kick a boy, you have to use your foot. You fi ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot, Lord. Ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot.
Well, ribbit me foot, no bother ribbit me hand. Cause if you ribbit it, me hand go only have one. We hear what them a style and them a style and fashion. Fi ribbit to you once, me and go ribbit to you twice. I'm going to show you how we flash it from the mic. Cause them a little style, say everyone half a like.
Ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot, Lord. Ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot. No took me na me ya ya outta hit me a fi low. No took me na me ya ya outta hit me a fi low. You want kick a boy, you a fi use your foot. Say the past and me tape, man, you call it took. You see me na the library, me a read a storybook. You fi ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot, Lord.
Ribbit me hand, you ribbit me head. Ribbit me and make for it, me favorite color that a red. Where them a little lyrics come for flash instead. When no people see me, them started to watch. Some people are asked, he's fatted that. Some people don't know me, come my head don't fart. We hear them a lyrics, I and I just a flash.
It's a beamer, a bama, a beamer, a bama. My name is Yellow Man, I don't worry 21. Mommy banna Kingston and me grow up Portland. But here Yellow Man, I go sing one song. Say fan me, Yellow Man, fan me. I beg you fan me, Yellow Man, fan me. I beg you fan me, Yellow Man, fan me. I beg you fan me, till I'm money.
Lord, me feel so high, when me feel so high. Lord, cause sense me now just red up me eye. Say after that me just take me stuff. And I boy beg me some and me not have enough. So when me come a dance and me come fi mash it up. So when you sit down me say me want to stand up. When you get your chicken just get your ketchup. And after that you drink one glass of syrup. We come Yellow Man, Lord, make me hurry up.
Ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot, Lord. Ribbit me and no bother ribbit me foot. You see me in the kitchen, I cook me the cooker. You see me na the library, me fi read one book. The past in fi tape, you call it took. Me gone a fishing on me line and me hook. But tell you when you kick a boy, you use your foot. Me say, great me great, you shouldn't underrate. Me say, great me great, me shouldn't underrate. Car, late me late, them a talk about me great.
But them a two DJ, you can't underrate. When we in and they dance, I want to tear off the gate. Lord, come with your cassette and come with your tape.
All right, we're back. 34 minutes on my clock. We haven't really done anything yet. So, all right, so here we go. We're going to start running through some of these stories. What would you call this week? Like a middle week? Like some stuff that might be of interest happened? Nothing super dramatic.
Listen, and any week where there's not like violent sex cults and that kind of thing, or drug over, you know, intentional drug overdoses. Or brutal murders. I'm counting that as a win.
There is one really sad story, but I don't think it's.
We're not going to talk about yet. That.
Jeez, John, killed you.
Okay, see, I'm stalling because I'm trying to read these names so I can actually read the story with.
Can we just talk about Danzig?
Fucking it up. So okay, here we go. So as of recording this. We're not too far out from when the World Cup happened. So during one of the games at the World Cup, members of the kind of like Russian anarcho art punk project thing, Pussy Riot, they rushed the field to protest the Russian government's various policies and things that they have done. They were arrested. They were charged with crimes related to the incident. And three of the four protesters were sentenced to 15 days in jail. I'm not even going to bother trying to read their names because I can't. They're also banned from attending sporting events for the next 3 years. And a fourth protester, at least at the time that we wrote this story, was still awaiting sentencing. John, I'm always unsure. Is Pussy Riot a band?
No.
And should we talk about them in that? Because we kind of do sometimes. Well, you know, we take it in the punk rock context, but like it feels like it's, you know, it it's disingenuous for us to talk about Pussy Riot and to talk about like what what the Menzingers are doing.
No, Pussy Riot is Pussy Riot is a collective that sometimes manifests itself as a band, but that is not its only arm, its only limb.
I would liken it to back in the late 60s, like the MC5 in Detroit. They were a band, but there was a movement behind them called the White Panthers. You know, they supported a radical leftist political movement. I would say Pussy Riot's more like the White Panthers, you know? More like the White Panthers than they were like the MC5.
Did MC5 form the White Panthers, or were they just members?
John Sinclair, their manager.
Oh. Did you know there was also
I'm actually 2 degrees separated from John Sinclair, John. Or 2 degrees separated from the MC5.
Oh, how's that?
My little punk band. The guitar player who I played with for many years in my band, he played saxophone in John Sinclair's band. The manager for MC5. John Sinclair had a band called the Blues Scholars or something. They were pretty awful, honestly. I mean, the band was good. They just played like freeform jazz. They didn't rehearse or anything. And John Sinclair just like basically spouted like beat poetry over top of it. I mean, it wasn't really very good, but yeah, I'm only 2 degrees separated from the MC5. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, honestly, all
the, like, here I am talking to you, freaking guys. Oh.
You're playing below your level, Tom.
You guys have to forgive me. I've been crazy busy at work. I've been working like a dog, and when I get home from work, I've been helping my dad put a metal roof on his house. So I literally have been working from like 7 a.m. till 10 p.m. And I haven't had any time to unwind, so I'm taking this opportunity to drink several beers while I'm talking to you guys. So if I interject with some non sequiturs, you'll have to let me slide. I haven't been on for 5 episodes. So what were we talking about again?
Can you say roof again?
Roof?
Yeah.
Is that not how you say it?
He said like
roof. I don't know. You said like a dog bark noise.
Roof. No, the problem is, Adam, you're used to saying the word roofie.
Yeah, I know. My predatory drug habit just kind of takes over the rest of my language.
I got off the roof at 9 o'clock to come here and podcast with you guys, to run home and take a shower and podcast. And my dad and brother looked at me like I just ran over their dog or something. I'm like, it's freaking 9 o'clock at night. But anyway, we're almost done. Family, it's the best.
I'm glad that you showered before getting on this, cross country audio program.
My microphone is so sensitive that you would be able to smell my sweaty balls from your house.
Oh, this is a wonderful episode. All right, so the next little quasi interesting political thing that we want to bring up here. So,
I'm sorry. We don't necessarily want to gloss over that quick, do we, John? You got thoughts about the Pussy Riot thing?
Oh, I'm just gonna say. I mean. It really, especially in the context of Russia, it actually is kind of like the huge threat it was in the 80s again, and up to a lot of shenanigans. And as we know, Pussy Riot members have disappeared for like 6 months and 12 months only. Like,
I was going to say, doesn't like a 15-day sentence where there's actually a measured sentence seem like sort of progress? It's BS, but you know.
I think Pussy Riot was tactical in that they know that like the world was watching this, so it would be a safe place to protest.
Harder for them to do.
Yeah, yeah. So,
good thought.
I commend Pussy Riot for taking visual action and really putting themselves on the line for what they believe in. Maybe some people over on this side of the globe should consider doing the same instead of getting outraged and then forgetting about it the next day.
I'm honestly unsure of how to contextualize Pussy Riot given the Russia of today, right? Like the Russia of a couple of years ago where, you know, there was no clear sign. I mean, unless you were in like Georgia or the Ukraine or anything like that. Right. But like there was no clear sign, like in the West, say, of outward aggression towards our way of life. So you would have looked at, you know, what Pussy Riot was protesting. And it was a lot of these like, you know, internal to Russia infractions, a lot of the, you know, the social, the social policies that were like predatory against like LGBT people and things like that. But you look at Pussy Riot and you say like, okay, like I get that there is like this radical protest art that is like all the more courageous because it's an oppressive society, and like, you know, that makes a lot of sense nowadays, where you have like, you know, all those bad things about Russia are still ongoing, but we also have this like all-encompassing, like, cyber war that's affecting the highest echelons of power and, you know, destabilizing Western institutions and all this stuff. Like, I don't know how I mentally fit something like Pussy Riot into that narrative anymore. Like, it was way cleaner when, you know, we could sit here in our safe, you know, unaffected by Russia, you know, universe and go, you know, oh, like look at this courageous group of artists that are like standing up against this oppressive, you know, autocracy. Cool. But now it's like, no, this oppressive autocracy is like literally fucking up everyone else's shit right now. And now I'm like, you know, now I don't know how to process that.
Well, John kind of hinted at it. Well, the fact of the matter is our protesters here, all our big loudmouth protesters, they have nothing to lose. These women are putting themselves at risk. And, you know, you have to respect them, even if you don't necessarily agree with everything they say. You have to respect their courage. I'm sorry. Nobody in this country has any courage. We're, you know, most of our protesters are a bunch of pussies. They're sitting by their keyboards.
It makes the outrage of like members of Congress that are then gonna in the next breath not do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, all the more horrible.
Well, I think to say that we face all the same problems that they do is probably overstating it. But
I just mean that like I feel like we're more involved in this narrative now directly than we were. Or at least than we believed we were.
You know, I grew up in the 80s, you know, the heat of the Cold War, if that makes sense. And I got to tell you, I've always been skeptical, even like, you know, we're over 20 years since the Berlin Wall came down, 90 or something. And supposedly all this changed and the East is, you know, Eastern Europe is our friend again. But I've always been skeptical. I don't know if it's just because I grew up during that era where I always, you know, like Russia bad. You know, I mean, I went and saw Rocky IV at the theater, you know. I mean, that was the Cold War in a glance, right?
I gotta correct myself before we get any further here. As I was rambling earlier, I said the Ukraine instead of Ukraine. And I'm sorry. You're not supposed to do that. Yeah.
Right.
Like the Ukraine implies like it's a peninsula and not a, you know, self-contained country.
Why is that? I mean, is
not being so polite, Adam. You Canadians, I'm telling
you. No, it's a serious thing. If you are from Ukraine, it's kind of offensive to be called the Ukraine, because calling the Ukraine really just reduces it to like a piece of geography which, you know, could be controlled by whoever. Ukraine is the actual name of that country. And if you're from Ukraine, like, you're from Ukraine. But you're not from...
It's the United States. It's the Netherlands.
Nah, it's the is not part of their sort of, like, official title, right? It's a little bit like, say, referring to... not that there's anything offensive about this, but, like, it's like referring to, say, like, where you're from as, like, oh, you're from, like, the East Coast... Right. And if we just completely reduced it to the East Coast and took all nationality of it, then we're strictly talking about geography. So whether that East Coast is owned by the United States or whether it's owned by, you know, a newly insurgent Canada under the loving guidance of Adam White, you know, it doesn't really matter. Right. It's the East Coast. Who cares? But so in the context where you have a country here where their sovereignty is being challenged by an aggressive partner, you know, referring to them just by the geographic term, you know, takes away a little bit of the agency that is a place that is like a, you know, a recognized country, which is Ukraine, not the Ukraine. So anyways, I apologize to all of our Ukrainians.
If that's the worst thing we had to apologize for, we're doing pretty good.
I'm just
too bad it's not the worst thing.
Trying to be Canadian here. Okay, so meanwhile, over in the UK, so...
That's offensive, Adam. The UK is offensive. It's United Kingdom.
Yes. That's not what you call the various segmentations of England and whatever else is over there. So anyways, okay. So so you've got a broadcaster, Nigel Farage, who is generally a right-wing kind of guy. He has a podcast that he is producing right now called Farage. Is it Farage or Farage? I don't know.
Farage. It's Farage.
Farage makes the pun better. Sorry. He has a podcast that he's putting out called Farage Against the Machine, where he talks about political issues and other things from a conservative standpoint. So Rage Against the Machine, the band, is not happy that their name has been co-opted for the name of some dingbat's podcast. So what they did is that they sent a cease and desist letter to Farage via their attorneys. In the letter, they stated, as you should know, Rage Against the Machine has publicly denounced the type of right-wing ideology that you have espoused for decades. Your anti-immigration rhetoric, lack of social compassion, and barely disguised racism and xenophobia are the antithesis of what Rage Against the Machine stands for. Thus, your surprising attempt to associate yourself with Rage is wholly inappropriate and completely inexplicable unless it's part of some bizarre cleansing ritual. That's actually kind of funny to be in a legal document. Whatever the motivation, please stop. Stop using Rage Against the Machine's name and logo. Change the name of your podcast and find some other target to troll. We support President Trump. I don't know why that's part of the...
We suggest President Trump.
Oh, sorry. We suggest, yes. Support makes no sense.
Oh, my gosh, Adam.
Yeah, hold on. I'm reading.
You're gonna get a cease and desist letter from Rage Against the Machine.
Jeez, yeah.
Or worse yet, you'll probably get like a cease and desist order from the Prophets of Rage.
So is for Rage Against the Machine, do they actually use like a Rage style logo?
Yes, specifically the following is Rage famously uses their font in red. For the Farage Against the Machine podcast logo, he highlights the words Rage Against the Machine in the name Farage Against the Machine. So the FA is slightly different than the rest, which looks very similar. Like, I don't know if Rage has a registered logo, but it looks similar to fonts and logos Rage has used before. So it looks like the Rage Against the Machine logo with FA in front in different colors and even different font. So it looks pretty close.
Nigel Farage is a not to get all petty and talk about someone's physical appearance, but he looks like a man that has melted at
I'm
some point
already, Adam.
And
I gotta say, I'm not sure that this was the right tact to take. Just to be play devil's advocate here, I have never heard of this Farage guy. I think he's got more attention from this.
No. He is he was a major figure in the Brexit.
I mean,
stuff.
Listen, I've heard of Rush Limbaugh, dude. I'm always English. No wonder I don't care about him.
No, like,
is he from UK or UK?
They did not draw. They did not draw attention to him or anything because of this.
Well, I mean, he's getting a lot of attention because of this.
Yeah, I mean, he was. Before any of this popped up, like he was a big loud right wing asshole of name in the UK. Like, he didn't need Rage's help to make that apparent. I just think that like there's something about Rage Against the Machine sending a neat orderly cease and desist letter through a lawyer that feels somewhat
disingenuous.
Disingenuous isn't the right word.
You mean that they're using the machine to enforce their rights?
That's a little bit closer to it, but I mean, like,
their corporate lawyer. Their corporate lawyer sent a firmly worded letter. I heard he's going to change the name of the show to "Never Mind the Bullocks." Here's the Farage.
It's just not. It's not the. It's not a bomb track, John. It's not a. It's not a radical way to approach that. It's just to have your lawyers write a letter.
I hear you.
What, you think Tom Morello should have done a benefit concert and played some of his terrible solo material?
I want to stop giving Tom Morello the agency over Rage Against the Machine. I want Zach De La Rocha to do something fucking cool about it. That's what I want.
To that point, I think it's very clear that Tom Morello does want Rage to continue and Zach does not want Rage to continue or Roy. Anyways, I mean, I don't think the issue is so much is Rage using the legal system or the capitalist system to their benefit. Rage are all rich. So, I mean, you certainly can criticize them for that, but this is not the time to criticize them for that. The time to criticize them for that is when they sign to a major label or when they sell a whole bunch of shirts made in Dominican Republic or, China. That's the time to criticize them for that. This, I'm glad they did this. I think it's clear trademark infringement. I mean, he's got the words Rage Against the Machine in his logo. I don't think Rage Against the Machine invented that phrase, though. I think that phrase has existed for a long time. But even so, the band kind of has taken ownership of it. And so I support them sending this guy a cease and desist, because I can't say for UK law, but in American law, if you don't defend your trademark, you can lose it, and you can lose it a lot quicker than you think. So them taking action against him is a way to defend that trademark, and also to make the guy's life a little bit more difficult. Although, you know, he might enjoy it and say, oh, this is getting me press. But the other way is for them to lose the rights to the trademark, which is even worse. So I think they made the right move here. You know, and if you want to criticize them for using the legal system or whatever, that too. But then this is just 1% of how they should change how they do their activities if the issue is Rage Against the Machine being capitalist. And
I don't think – I mean, like, send a cease and desist letter. I mean, like yeah. I mean, like, use – they have the money. They exist within our society. You know, by all means, like, use the lawyers you have at your disposal. But as far as, like, the public face of your outrage, you know, do something cool.
Oh, but
I don't know what that is.
But if they do that, doesn't that give like honestly, they might have just sent him a thing like and been real quiet about it, and then of course it leaks into the public. If they did this big thing, we hate for Rage, you know, that would give him press, you know. So really, maybe that you sent him a CD on the DL, and then maybe for Rage made a big deal out of it. You see, so they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, they keep it quiet, then they're not being very Rage like. They make a huge deal out of it. They give this guy free press, you know.
What he probably should do is just change the name to Prophets of For Rage.
Would that be PROFITS or PR?
Yeah, exactly, Prophets. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that'd be great, because then, you know, it takes Zach out of it. Zach's the only one I care about. I'm like, I hope Zach's doing okay.
I think you know, some guys get rich and they're like, you know, they're just on a, like John Stamos, you know, that guy's just on an island chilling out, or what's his name, the guy from Sliders, that guy's just chilling out, you know what I mean? But like I don't think that Zach is like just enjoying his wealth. I think he's, I mean, I'm just guessing, but going off like the numerous stalled projects, he was supposed to release an album with Run the Jewels, and it did not materialize. He had a solo album before that that did not materialize. One Day's a Line was bad, and people hated it. I think he's not doing great. I don't know, though. You know, I could be wrong. I don't hang out with him that much these days.
These days you don't. But
no. But back in the day.
I mean, like, Battle of Los Angeles was mostly about you, right?
You know what's funny is you listen to Rage now, it does sound very 90s. Like, it doesn't really hold up that well, if you ask me. Like, it sounds...
No, good. I agree. It's very dated.
Yeah, yeah. At the time, it felt like unique, timeless music. But now I listen to it, I'm like, oh my God, this is so 90s. And honestly, it didn't sound as explosive as I remember, like, Rage, like, just blowing up everywhere. I was like, oh my God, this is some of the most explosive mainstream music I've ever heard. Now when I listen to it, to a degree, it sounds like sedate, you know?
I think a part of the problem is that we started this episode by talking about like radio DJs, like uncreative rock radio has so killed Rage for me, because I have heard the
killing
the name not only the song, but the crappy radio edit of Killing in the Name. It starts to get to that point, and then they just like jump to the final like, dun, 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 and it's like, hold on, you just cut like 3 minutes out of this song, right? But just, I've heard like in the past 5 years, that is the only Rage song that I have heard on the radio, that I can remember, and I always turn it off because I'm just like, ugh, this fucking song.
You listen to the albums now. And they had highlights. All the albums had some great moments, but they're very tedious to listen to the album start to finish.
I'd be willing to venture that you could probably pluck a bunch of songs off of Battle of LA that you could slot into the radio, and I would be fine with them showing up because I'm not tired of them. You know, that era is kind of my favorite. Like that would have worked for me. But yeah, if I have to hear like Killing the Name one more time, I'm gonna lose it. I'm gonna lose it, John. All right. What's next here? What are we doing? The Adolescents.
Yeah, that, as everyone knows, Steve Soto suddenly and unexpectedly passed away, and everyone was pretty bummed out about it. However, they decided to go ahead with their European tour without Steve Soto, and Brad Logan of Rats in the Wall and Leftover Crack is filling in on guitar, leaving the question is, when is a band still a band? When should a band give it up? But also, another consideration is, people say, like, when one band member dies, people are like, oh, well, they should have broke up the band. Sometimes the guy that dies, like, he says, like if he knows he's sick or whatever, he's like, I want the band to continue, you know? So there's that issue as well, you know? Like, Dave Brocky famously and quite cryptically used to say, you know, when I get too old or when I die, I want Gwar to continue. And so I don't know if you can, you know, criticize Gwar for continuing, because Dave Brocky, the main guy, said, I want that to happen, you know? So here, you know, you've got sort of similar situation in that the band is continuing without a key member, but maybe that key member wanted the band to continue and saw it as something of his legacy, you know.
It was only the two of them. It's only Tony Reflex and Steve Soto, right? I saw him last. I saw him last summer. It was only the two of them.
Like, you mean OG members? You mean, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Tony Reflex is not going to be the only 80s punk and hardcore guy fronting a band of young people. I mean, it's unfortunately, that's just the way it ends up. I don't know. They could split up if they wanted. They just put out a new album. They probably like to support it. And the fact of the matter is, that's how these guys make a living. They're not rich guys. This is not Rage Against the Machine. These are guys who go to Europe and tour and can afford to live and pay their rent. So from a practical standpoint, I don't have an issue with it. From a standpoint of writing new music, I wouldn't think it would be a good sign, because I think he was the most prominent writer in the band and just a very generally talented guy, good all-around dude. Saw him last summer for the first time, the only time I ever saw the Adolescents. They were great, and he looked horrible. I am not shocked by his...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He's very, very large. He looked like he probably weighed 600 pounds, but got down to 300 pounds. And he looked waxy and just, yeah, he didn't look good at all. That was, like I said, that was last summer. But anyway, the great band, but man, I would go see him again. The Blue Album is.
Yeah, I can't begrudge them for. Yeah, I certainly can't begrudge them for going back out on the road. I mean, For a lot of these guys, like, yeah, this is their way to make a living. So, you know, they're certainly not going to, you know, proceed as if Steve is replaceable. Like, they're not going to just not acknowledge that they lost this, you know, major part of that band's legacy. So, you know,
but they got this tour booked in Europe, right? And this tour in Europe means they can pay the rent for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I don't pass ill judgment at all on them for having to kind of keep going. That's, you know, as long
the
as
fact they, matter, the fact of the matter, Brad Logan is I'm almost surely taking a pay cut to play with him and just doing it because he wants to play with the Adolescents.
Brad Logan actually has a famous career as being kind of a fill-in guy before Leftover Crack. He played with The Crowd. He played with Wayne Peters' first band. He actually played with a whole bunch of those OC bands, so that's where he's from.
I did not know that.
God, whatever happened to Dwayne Peters?
He's still around. US Bombs was just touring.
Dwayne Peters got issues, Adam. A lot of issues.
You think?
I know. Maybe Dwayne Peters is not one of these kind of guys that can, like, exist in today's
environment. Oliveri looks at Dwayne Peters and says he has issues.
Yeah. Nick Oliveri looks like Mr. Rogers compared to Dwayne Peters. You know what I mean?
Whew. All right, what are we doing? Play a song, someone.
John, you better play a song. I haven't thought of one yet.
You want me to play another song? All right, I'll play another song.
I'm sorry, Adam, you play a song.
All right. Do we want Angry or Spooky?
Spooky. No, Angry.
Can't have both?
You can't. Not in the two choices that I'm giving you. All right, so there's a band out of Vancouver called, I guess it's Lie. It's L-I-E, like lie, but there's an accent aigu over the E, so I don't know what you call that. I don't know how you pronounce it. No one's ever said it out loud to me, so I'm going to say, like, Lie. They are a self-professed cold punk band, which is a genre that I don't think actually exists, but it's something that they like to refer themselves as. They just sound like a really kick-ass, you know, angry political three-piece. So anyways, they released a record called Hounds on Mint in early July. It is super cool and super mad and super angry. If you'd like bands like, say, like White Lung, this is within that kind of family. So anyways, I'm gonna play a song from Hounds. This is I guess Lié out of Vancouver, and we're gonna play the song Country Boys. Here you go. I mean, that could have been kind of spooky. They referred themselves as like dark punk and cold punk and all these genres that I don't think are real genres.
Honestly, the only genre I listen to anymore is very angular and catchy riff with guy rapping over it about politics, but only if it's on a major label. That's why I listen to these days.
I'm glad to hear you giving up two-tone ska in the hour we've been talking.
All right, John, this next story. I'm with the commenters on this one in that I don't get the hook. But why is this a story we're discussing?
Yeah, I don't understand why people don't get the hook on this either. Like I thought this was a self-evident story. People are like, why are you guys reporting on this? I'm like, are you all knuckleheads? I guess they are. The point being, here's the story. Univision is selling a bunch of properties it bought a mere 18 months ago, included in two properties, the Onion properties and the Gizmodo properties. Of course, the Onion owns the AV Club. AV Club is famously an alt-media company that, you know, covered more so back in the day, but even now, covered punk rock, metal, and actually was one of the print weeklies in cities that they stopped doing print about 5 years ago. That would, you know, you could find a Jello Biafra interview or a Keith Morris interview in the Onion, or not the Onion, the AV Club, rather, in big cities, you know. So, I mean, in 1995, in 2000, you show me another newspaper that's interviewing Keith Morris, and, you know, you're not going to find it. You know, it's the AV Club. The point being is it was quite a shock when Univision bought Gizmodo and Onion 18 months ago because no one knew the Onion was for sale. And sure enough, they bought it. But now, a mere 18 months later, they're trying to sell it again. The point being is we are seeing an extreme collapse of alt media, of which Punk News is a part of which Punk Rock is a part of. You know, LA Weekly was bought over by a cabal of vampires, essentially, and they're controlling it from behind the scenes. NME just closed up shop not too long ago and completely fell apart. Another important magazine closed up. Let's see here. Rolling Stone just sold, of course, not out of the blue, but, you know, being surprising. The point being is alternative media that is not controlled by gigantic investors and tends to be more biased but less biased now in the current field are getting bought up, destroyed, or disintegrating, and it's kind of a scary, ominous thing. And I don't know why people can see that.
My major interaction with The Onion has always been like as a comedy, as like a parody thing on the internet. So their whole history that you just explained as a print publication was news to me right now.
I don't know how that's news. I feel like I get attacked by the commenters because they're not aware of the scenarios. You know what I mean? Like that's what I feel like.
Often. Wasn't The Onion? It was a Midwestern thing, wasn't it, John? Wasn't that a Madison or something?
I thought it was Denver, but it might be Madison.
But I remember I definitely remember. Now this would have been around the 2000 era, but I definitely remember like having 50 beers and then going to like certain like hip diner type places and sitting down reading The Onion while we waited for our food.
Right. And of course the AV Club was a big section in The Onion.
Yeah. I mean, they have actually done books that compiled which I think you can still get that compiled the newspaper stories.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, no, I love The Onion. I hope it does well. I literally just tagged my wife, I think like 2 days ago in a post.
I would say that when Univision bought AV Club, they did significant changes to it, and it made it a lot less easy. It made it harder to navigate, and they cut out a lot of my favorite features from the AV Club. I still like the AV Club. They still do some neat stuff, but it's not as good as it was more than 18 months ago.
We should buy it. Adam, what do you think about Punk News buying that?
Yeah.
As I don't have no control over Punk News's finances,
sure. Buy The Onion and we could compete with the Hard Times.
Let's buy The Onion and sell bootleg records through it.
There you go. I want to start printing papers again. I'm sure that's a big money loser, and then I can have something to read when I have 50 beers and I go to the cafe.
Well, that's another thing. It's like Univision bought these very expensive properties 18 months ago, and after 18 months, they're like, nope. You know, it's like,
I mean, it's clear that Univision had no idea what to do with them, and they bought them in kind of a package, right?
Yeah.
So they didn't know what to do with them. That's not surprising. That's the modern media, you know. Three companies own 90% of everything, you know.
Yeah. So the point being is, it's a very scary time for alt media. And so, what's the answer, boys? What's the answer? Because I mean, at least in the United States, like. Like there's so much bias in things right now, you know, and also most stuff only covers the most famous stuff, you know, like, so what do we do for, how do we keep punk rock in the news, boys? How do we keep people informed about, you know, what Dwayne Peters is up to this week?
I feel like we've dropped the Dwayne Peters file. Really, someone needs to pick that up and
they were playing in Chicago with the Dwarves and the Murder Junkies a few weeks ago, but I had gone to Chicago for a different show, and I just can't afford to go to Chicago every other weekend. But I would have been curious to see the train wreck that is Dwayne Peters. Maybe he's got it all together now. Who knows?
He doesn't. Yeah, just FYI, he does not.
John, you don't know what was going on 2 weeks ago.
Well, I know what was going on a few months ago. Fair enough.
Man, there was a time in my life where I really, really liked the U.S. bombs. Okay, what else we got on the docket here? Univision, that? Oh, people might care about this one. Okay, so Against Me have finished a new record. They reported that they have finished recording, mixing, and mastering the record. Laura Jane went on the Twitter. She said, "Record is mastered, decided on a sequence and cover art. You know what? We even got a record label, too. What's fucked up now is that I'm not telling you anything more about it." So that's pretty interesting. We had news a few weeks ago that Andrew Seward is rejoining the band on bass. This is going to be the follow-up to their 2016 record, Shapeshift With Me. And, I mean, the news to this, for me, is not so much that they've finished a record, but it's that they found a label. Because the last couple... They were self-released, were they not?
Yes, they were both self-released.
Now,
Total get the Trouble. That's their label.
Like, there's self-released, and then there's, like, quote-unquote self-released. So I always assume that when a band of Against Me size self-releases an album, they've got someone.
For at least distributing. Like, at least a halfway decent
Getting that thing into stores and, you know... shipping out promo copies and doing all that shit, right? Like that, like Laura wasn't doing that out of her apartment. So this one though, apparently is with a, like with a, you know, if they said they have a record label, I assume that means like a name record label that we would know.
We taking bets? Epitaph?
Ricky's always like Rise Records, but Rise is actually a good guess for this, I'd say.
Side One Dummy?
Nah, I would say no.
Something about Rise I find so boring.
Because it's the most boring label. There's some cool bands on Rise, but
They've done some great bands where they've kind of neutered them production-wise.
Yeah.
I don't have any particular like criticisms of Rise as
It's Narmer Records, guys. I hate to bring.
Yeah,
it
I mean, like just Rise. They have no identity to me. Like it's generic.
Come on, John. You can do it.
It's You're Epitaph. Ready for a very I'll do it. Listen, I'll do it for sure.
What cassette are there? Only. There's no more labels. It's Epitaph.
The problem with the no more labels thing, I love all these little labels, and I don't have a problem with the little label thing, but the distribution is so bad.
Distribution, honestly, even for Epitaph.
And when you mail order records a lot like I do, you want to order two or three things at a time because you get killed on postage. So if you're buying one record and paying postage, it's brutal. That's why it's nice to have some of these distribute, you know, like No Idea used to be before they took a dump or you know, some of these, there used to be some good distros, but man, it's tough now.
I'll never forgive No Idea because I ordered a record and a 50-cent sticker from them and shipping was like $6, you know what I mean? And yeah. They sent me, they said, "We don't have the record, so here's store credit and here's your sticker," and they charged me $6 to ship the stupid sticker. Anyways, what if Against Me kind of did a Rosenstock, kind of like an unexpected label, like Polyvinyl or you know, one of those guys? Or Vice.
I mean, like, yeah, Matador?
Or Matador.
Sub Pop.
Sub Pop. Which is named records. Two Tones.
Columbia.
Stiff.
What was Rage Against the Machine on? Columbia, right?
Interscope.
But like in terms of like what might be cool, like Sub Pop could be kind of cool.
And Sub Pop is a boring label. I think Matador is more interesting.
The only good Sub Pop band consistently is Mudhoney.
Wouldn't you Matador, go to see Against Me Mudhoney tour?
I'd go.
I've seen Against Me enough times that I can't keep track of it, and they're playing at the end of the month in Grand Rapids, but I am going to miss it. My grandparents are celebrating their 65th anniversary.
Bring them.
And want the family to get together. Be like, "Grandpa, there's this, I don't, you know, my grand, you know, they're in their 80s, dude. They're not that open-minded."
Don't explain all that. Just bring them. They'll get down.
In my semi-drunken stupor, I'm trying to think of what not to say. I think I'll just pass. Like I'm just gonna punt. I'm done.
Go spend time
with this line of conversation.
Go spend time with your family, Tom. Against Me, you know, yes. They'll come around. You'll see them. You know,
they're playing at a club that I love too. But it's Sunday night, which is pretty not a bad night for a show. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to miss him. Anyway.
So we all agree. All right. We all agree. It's going to be Interscope Records, produced by Dr. Dre.
Cooking Vinyl.
Cooking Vinyl. No, I haven't heard that mentioned in the longest time. All right. So
I have no idea. I honestly couldn't care less as long as it's distributed in my local record store.
Oh, God. I was about to read this story, and I literally started yawning, and I... It was not meant as a criticism, but it happened, and I feel like just mentioning that it happened. All right, this is bad. I feel bad about reading this because people love this band. Oof. I don't judge them. They're allowed to love this band.
I like that. I'm going to assume that I'm not going to like them either. I'm going to side with John on this. I don't know who you're talking about.
Any of us. I don't think any of us hate this band. I think this band is a non-factor in our lives, and that is going to come off as snarky dismissal, but that is not the intent. At least not my intent. Anyways, Alkaline Trio, they have a new single that they've released from an upcoming album. This is a pretty unexpected thing from what I hear from their fan base. No!
What happened? I fell asleep. What happened?
No.
Who's putting out their record, Adam? What's the label? That's all we care about now.
The song is titled Blackbird.
oh, I'm sorry. The title is so boring.
It's the old Beatles song?
It's not the Beatles song. But hold on. Let's talk about Blackbird for a minute here. So I'm in university. My roommate, one of my best buddies here, he's playing the acoustic guitar.
Buys an acoustic guitar. It's the first song he learns.
Blackbird was his I'm going to learn to finger pick song. And as he got better and better at it, he would just play it over and over and over at increasing speeds where we were living in the basement of this building. And we had a paper thin wall in between our two rooms, and I'd be sitting there trying to do some fucking work or whatever else I would have done in university, which is probably like playing Wolfenstein 3D, right? I'm trying to do something important. And all I hear is like Blackbird, which is not a song that I hate or anything, but over and over and over and over and over and over and over until I just had to like walk into his room and try to murder him. So anyways,
smash the guitar over his head in a dramatic fashion.
I walked into his room once and he was sitting there at his computer, and I tried to do that thing that you see on action movies where like Bruce Willis would walk up and like grab your neck and just like twist your head and break your neck and then you'd fall over and die. Right. So I walked behind him and I did that like gently, like as a joke. And I think I really hurt him and he was mad at me. And I'm like, he's like, you could have killed me. And I'm like, that doesn't work. That's a movie thing. But anyways, I'm really trying to avoid talking about the Alkaline Trio here. So the song Blackbird is off their new record. The record is called Is This Thing Cursed?
And it's a telephone.
It is a picture of a telephone. Yes.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
It's a cursed telephone. It's cursed. That's what they're asking. It is out on August 31st on Epitaph Records. There you go. The album will be their first studio release since 2013's My Shame Is True, which is a pun that...
I'm so sorry, guys. I fall asleep whenever I hear terrible puns. I'm sorry.
No, we're being nice to the fans of this beloved...
I'm cool with the Elvis Costello reference.
I hate puns and titles.
I'm cool with an Elvis Costello reference. You're cool with a dumb pun.
Yes.
But yeah, the single streaming over on like Spotify and Apple Music and wherever else. So you can if you get an account somewhere and you go listen to it. Anecdotally, from people on my Twitter account that are Alkaline Trio fans, they are surprised and delighted. That is my only opinion.
I actually did not listen to the song. Do you guys listen to it? Or is it, John, you're just assuming it's boring?
No, well, I listened to their last album, This Fear's Model.
That was five years ago.
This Fear's Model. That was a good one.
Yes. I can't think of another Elvis Costello. I wanted to match you, but I'm too far in at this point.
I don't have anything against this band. They've just never done anything for me. But like, there's people I know that just fucking hang off of their whole...
Their first couple of albums on Asian Man were pretty decent. I sort of have a soft spot for this band. Can't say I've listened to them in a long time, and I'm sure the new album will probably not do a whole lot for me, but I like their early stuff.
Harmed Forces was a pretty good album. Harmed Forces.
There you go.
That was good.
Don't make me Google genre podcasting.
Yeah. They're in the same category for me as like a band like, say, like Lagwagon, where, you know, lots of people like that band. I never got
that. That's me with Lagwagon. I feel bad. I actually feel guilt about not getting into Lagwagon, but they just don't do anything for me.
Real question about Alkaline Trio.
Shit on them. Like, if people like Lagwagon, that's fine.
Yeah, same here. They seem like great guys. Joey Cape is a fine songwriter. It just doesn't do anything for me.
So I'm like that with this. I mean, I have a funny personal, like, name-droppy Matt Skiba story.
Two degrees separated from Matt Skiba?
Does it involve you, Matt Skiba, and Peter Murphy of Bauhaus?
I would say, because it's not as impressive as my MC5 connection, but whatever.
I was at a very early name-droppy punk rock bowling in like 2005 or something like that, and we were standing around on the gaming floor of the Gold Coast Casino, and you know, a bunch of us dumb punk newsers were there, but also like a lot of like fairly famous punk rock people were, you know, standing around the poker tables or wherever we were. And Matt Skiba, you know, like, who is one of these punk rock personalities that, you know, if certain fans were to see him would lose their shit, was just, you know, standing around with us like a normal dude. And then someone from the casino walked over and carded everyone, and Skiba didn't have an ID, and he got kicked out of the casino. And I feel that was, you know,
Skiba's a nice guy.
Where I turned to whoever I was with, and I was like, "Who was that again?" And they're like, "That was Matt Skiba." And I was like, "Oh," but I didn't know because again, I didn't really care too much at the time.
Because you fell asleep immediately upon.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not shitting on them.
Is that going? Nice.
Of all the bands that our regular readers and listeners love, they're one of the least offensive to me.
That's true. Listen, they're all nice people. I think I just hear it and I'm like, there's nothing here for me. You know, I'm not dissing them. They're not bad.
Last time I saw the Vandals, Derek Grant played drums. Derek Grant of Alkaline Trio.
How'd you stay awake?
You know, Anarchy Burger, John.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make fun of it. Alkaline
Trio, the government.
They seem like nice people. People love them. They're not a terrible band. There's just nothing there for me. You know what I mean?
I like when we were putting the stories together for this episode, I
they
was
have
like,
no,
I was like, we have to tell the people about the trio story. Like,
it's a big story.
Disservice to our mandate without talking about this. But anyways, there we go. There's an Alkaline Trio record coming out. Its name is not a pun, really.
No, like people love this band, man.
I think it's one of those bands that if you listened to their first record or two at a certain age, they spoke to like every teenage problem and anxiety that you would have had in a way that other music has never spoken to, and you love them for that reason. And just like when that was happening for a lot of my peers, I was listening to less than Jake. So,
which addressed none of those problems.
No, it addressed tons of those problems. Like three quarters of the first few Less Than Jake's records were just songs about like getting in a car and just leaving your shitty town because like no one can escape.
See, I feel the same way about Less Than Jake that John does about Alkaline Trio. Like, I'm okay with them. I don't dislike them, but you won't catch me listening.
That's not how John feels about Alkaline Trio. John is full of open contempt.
I don't have contempt. I just like making fun of them because I find it amusing. Like, honestly, like, Alkaline Trio is a band that if they become famous, or if they are famous and they make lots of money, I don't see that as an affront to music. I'm just like, whatever, man. You know, whatever. They're fine. You know, there's way. I mean, honestly, anybody that's not a bearded band, I'm okay with.
They are clean shaven. That is a plus.
That's all that you care about is just the.
This is the only.
You're
John, are you clean shaven, John?
No, I'm not.
Adam forgot the.
You're just trying to promote the cultural cultural agenda of the Gillette company. This is what.
Adam's got a full beard kick, and I haven't shaved my hair on my chin for 2.5 years. I haven't cut it.
Not by the hair of Tom's chinny chin chin. Okay, what are we doing?
We're playing a tune and wrapping up this helicopter crash of an episode.
It's my turn.
Yeah, we've run out of us, so it's you.
All right. I'm going to play, this is totally random, but, you know, John and I, we're always in that dancing state of mind.
We are.
So, a couple months ago, there was a really cool Danzig tribute album that came out, and it was curated by a guy out of Detroit, and I'm going to play, let's do the Child Bite song. So this is Child Bite doing a Sam Hain classic called Unbridled. So Child Bite from Detroit doing Unbridled by Sam Hain.
The touch.
If anyone wants to send us mail, podcast at punknews.org is how you do that.
I'd blame it on the roof or the roofies.